The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good day. Welcome again, everyone, to another edition of Boomer Generation Radio. Coming to you from the studios of WWDB AM 860 here in Philadelphia and streaming live on WWDBAM.com. You can follow us on Boomer Generation Radio on Facebook, and we invite you to go to the Facebook page of Boomer Generation Radio and like us there. And if you want to contact us, boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. This portion of Boomer Generation Radio is being brought to you by Kendall, a system of not-for-profit communities and services that advocate for and empower older adults to reach their full potential. Kendall, committed to working with others to together transform the experience of aging, and to learn more about Kendall, that's K-E-N-D-A-L. We invite you to visit them at www.discoverkendall.org. That's www.discoverkendall.org. Or call them toll-free at 888-759-0128. So we welcome you to Boomer Generation Radio this morning. A little bit of a different tack here before our guests call in from Ohio in a couple of minutes. We have to do a little surgery in light of full disclosure. Our first guest, Ricky Goodstein from the Goodstein Legal firm, called in sick, which is a shame, and something's going around, and we wish her well. But it gives me an opportunity to invite you at 610-664-4100. That's 610-664-4100 to chime in on a couple of issues that I want to raise before we move into our guest segment here. And one particular issue that I mentioned with Barry in the crossover a couple of minutes ago, of a case that is now coming to fruition out in the Midwest, and was actually in the New York Times last Tuesday, a week ago, and made the front section of the Philadelphia Inquirer this past Sunday, I think. The Times article was entitled "Sex, Dementia, and a Husband on Trial at Age 78. I raise this because I'd love to get somebody's opinion on this. I've raised this with a couple of people, including a class that I teach at our seminary in New York yesterday morning, about perhaps the need to create new types of vocabulary for extended life stages and new life stages and new situations that we're dealing with. Anyway, the article detailed the story of a Henry Rayhorns, who is being charged with third-degree felony sexual abuse, being accused of having sex with his wife in a nursing home. And here's the rub. Henry's wife, Donna, had severe Alzheimer's and was in a nursing home. The story discusses the background of some internal family issues, which obviously have come into play here. Donna passed away last August, and soon after, her husband was arrested. In a very interesting paragraph, the writer of the Times article, a woman by the name of Pam Bullock, wrote, quote, "The case pivots on longstanding medical and ethical concerns that will become only more pressing as the population ages and rates of dementia rise. How can anyone determine whether a person with dementia can say yes to sex? Who has the right to decide?" Unquote. We do know, and some of you may have experience with this, that many facilities do have statements that protect the rights of residents to have sexual relationships. But this case, and it's a very long and detailed case, raised the issue of people with dementia or Alzheimer's whose cognitive abilities are obviously impaired. If a spouse, in a moment of tenderness and love, engages in such physical relationships, who can say that this is abuse? Indeed, according to the article, follow-up exams indicated no such indication of abuse. There's no bruises, no battering. The article cites many authorities on aging and nursing home administration. One remarkable quote from the chief executive of the Hebrew Home in Riverdale up in New York reminded the author of the article of the importance of presence and touch, especially in a facility where loss is so present. The director of this home was quoted to say, "So much of aging and so much of being in a long-term care facility is about loss. Loss of independence, loss of friends, loss of ability to use your body. Why would we want to diminish that?" Unquote. So what this raised to me is a concern that seems to be slowly emerging as our longevity revolution continues. And our generation is going to be dealing with this and already is. Given the new realities of aging, do we need to create a new vocabulary to deal with these new stages of life? Do we need to have, as part of the intake interview for such cases as the Rayhorn case, questions that raise the scenario of permitting sexual relationships? And what about the growing rush of medical technology that makes such terms as terminally ill now subject to review and reinterpretation? It's a fascinating case. I think it's in many ways the tip of the iceberg. I think a lot more of this is going to come to fruition. So, I would be very interested if anybody would like to chime in on this. The call-in number here at DB, WWDB, is 610-664-4100. Not asking anybody to reveal any personal information, but really the whole idea of, if in a situation like this, this man is being charged with third-degree sexual abuse and, the idea that his wife perhaps could not give consent, but that this gentleman from the Riverdale home in New York really seems to indicate that the physical presence, the idea of touch and with a husband and a wife, especially when one of the spouses is in such a delicate situation, may actually be beneficial. I think in the context of the relationship, in the context of the article, several experts who are quoted in both the Times article and the Philadelphia Inquirer, I think from last weekend, the idea that the touch is so important. And given the fact that these facilities, and as the article mentions, people are alone. They are in a very, very precarious, lonely, isolated, and cut off existence in many ways. And we will be bringing on somebody very soon in a couple of weeks from a new organization called Clergy Against Alzheimer's and the U.S. Against Alzheimer's. This is another organization that is being developed to really lobby for and raise awareness of issues regarding research in Alzheimer's, funding for Alzheimer's. Ginny Bigger, who is from that organization, is scheduled to be here on May the 5th, and it may be interesting to talk to her about this as well. So I invite you, if any of you want to chime in on this, it's a very delicate issue, and in fact, the whole issue of sexuality and assisted living facilities and nursing homes and is an issue that really is not going to be ignored much longer. In fact, there was just another article during the last couple of days, I think, in the Inquirer that spoke about this again. I think it was on Sunday in the Sunday's health section, last Sunday's health section in the Inquirer, that this is an issue as baby boomers age out and some of us wind up in these facilities, that the sexual identity is not going to be subsumed. And it's a subject that really needs to be discussed, I would imagine, I would hope. And I do know from some of my own research that there are facilities such as the Hebrew Home in Riverdale and another one that I researched, the Handmaker Home in Tucson, which actually have codicils, which actually have paragraphs when you enter the facility guaranteeing the right of sexual privacy and relationships, etc. So this is it's an interesting topic. It goes also with another recommendation that I want to make to you if you are interested in any of this. And so many of our people are being involved with home health care issues, because caring for somebody, regardless of what the concern is an increasing issue. There's a book that was just recently published called The Age of Dignity by a woman who I'm trying to get on the show. I think she's scheduled to come on the show in the middle of July. Her name is A. Jen Poo, A-I-J-E-N. Her last name is spelled P-O-O. The Age of Dignity, if you're at all interested and have a concern about what I call the economics of aging, this is a book that I think you really should get a hold of. It's very well written, extremely well documented. And the thesis of the book is basically with the explosion of aging and caregiving and the people who are going to be needing home health care aides, the need to professionalize this group of people for whom right now a lot of it is not professionalized, very few standards. And the author, Ms. Pooh, really writes to the idea of it's time to really professionalize, raise the standards of pay, raise the training, since so many families are going to be in need of in the future and are in need of now people to have home health care workers, that it's so many times just a hit and miss of getting people who are qualified. To really have national standards and a minimum wage and professionalize this, I think this goes also to the whole movement right now of this raising minimum wages and professionalizing and making people have a decent standard of living. So I would suggest that if you're all interested in this, this goes to the whole economics of aging issue, which is a real issue. And we're going to try to get some people on during the next couple of months here on Boomer Generation Radio to talk about that. And because it's a very, very real issue for those of you in the audience who are having to write the checks every week to home health care agencies or the assisted living facility. The statistics that are coming out about just the average cost of what it means to have someone in a nursing home, which the Genworth Corporation published, I think, a week ago, that those basic minimum costs per year run anywhere from $85,000 to $90,000 a year. That's a lot of money. A lot of insurances don't cover it. Medicare only covers a portion or the beginning of it. And so the economics of aging is really an issue that I think all of us have to be aware of, and we're going to try to do some more programming around that during the next couple of months. Anyway, again, the call-in number is 664-4100 here, area 610, if you want to chime in on that case in the Midwest or the economics of aging. And we're going to take a little bit break now with some good old-fashioned music from our generation. This is a Beatles number that on a different type of a take, a little bit not strictly rock and roll, but a little bit more mellow approach of, I think it's one of the great Beatles tunes. Thank you, Tony. Again, this is Boomer Generation Radio coming to you from the studios of WWDB AM 860 here in Philadelphia, streaming live on WWDBAM.com. Again, you can contact the show by boomergenerationradio@gmail.com and by going to the Boomer Generation Radio Facebook page. Just to mention from one of our good friends here at Boomer Generation Radio, Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice, which reminds you that now is the time to think, to talk, and to act about conversations with your loved ones. If surgery or accident or serious illness has prevented you from speaking for yourself, or would your loved ones know your wishes, would you know theirs? Think about what would you like to speak about, talk about your wishes with those who matter to you, and act by writing them down. Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice says now is the time to do that, to think, to talk, and to act. Experts agree that the right place to have these delicate conversations is around your kitchen table or dining room table or perhaps in the family room, but not in the ICU. Think of these talks as your gift to your loved ones to communicate wishes, prevent family burdens, and to avoid disagreements during times of crisis. If you already have an advance directive, find out today about talking the talk and how talking the talk goes far beyond the legal living will your lawyer may have helped you complete. For tips and resources to help you begin these timely conversations, we invite you to visit SamaritanNJ.org. That's SamaritanNJ.org/think-talk-act. That's SamaritanNJ, SamaritanNJ.org/think-talk-act. That's part of the Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice in southern New Jersey. And through, again, through the magic of technology, we are pleased to welcome our guest today, Michelle Tarsitano Amato. Michelle, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi. Good to talk with you. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for calling in a little early. We really appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate being part of this, so thank you for inviting me.
Michelle is the Director of Creative Arts Therapy and Dementia Specialist at Kendall in Oberlin in the beautiful state of Ohio. So we welcome you. How's Ohio today?
It's actually sunny, and we're enjoying it.
Yes, yes. The sun may show up here. People don't know what to do with it after the winter here. They think there's
right.
This big thing in the sky. We haven't seen it for so long and don't know what to do with it. So we're going to talk a little bit about this very, very interesting program at Kendall in Oberlin with the Oberlin College community that deals with a lot of intergenerational issues. And the intergenerational thing is a very, very powerful mode of communication between generations, one that's kind of like ignored, I think, in a lot of places. So could you walk us through exactly what this program is that you're developed or have developed at Kendall in Oberlin?
The program that we have, actually many, many programs, but the one I wanted to focus on was what we call it's a freshman course at the college. It is Ars in Moriendi, and it's run by Professor Jed Detman. And what he does is it's a literature course, and the course really focuses on how has aging and end of life been treated in American literature. And it's specifically American literature and how, you know, so the students, they're freshmen, and they are learning and reading about what aging is in our literature, how we've been stereotyped, and all of these, how has it been viewed. And then what Jed and I did is we met and we said, why don't we pair them with our community residents that live in at Kendall at Oberlin. And it's a retirement community that's north of the city. We're in walking distance from the college, and it seemed like a really good fit for us. And one of the things that was we didn't expect, so the idea was that the students and our older adults would be connected together and have a different view of the same pieces of literature that when they're reading them. And what does somebody that has lived a long life be able to communicate to somebody that is, in their starting their college career about aging and what does it really mean? So you're reading these things, but what does that really mean when you're reading them? And we pair people up, and they have these conversations. And through these conversations, really deep and rich relationships are built. And that was a side effect we were hoping for, but we were really glad it actually happened. And what we have found is that we've been running this course. Well, you know, Jed runs the course at the college, and then I help coordinate all the residents in Kendall at Oberlin's side. And we have been doing this together, this partnership, for about 10 years now.
So what are the books that, do you know off the top?
Well, like, some of, they're not all books. There are a lot of them are, like, short stories, like The Yellow Wallpaper is one that they've read, and it's about a woman who, in her experience of being ill and stuck in a room, and what that, you know, the emotional turmoil she went through. I'm trying to think of some of the others. That's the one that came off the top of my head.
Okay, let me just throw something else out there, because it just triggered something. These are 18-year-old kids, freshmen, and granted, Oberlin is a very, very tough flight school. But these are still 18, 19-year-old young men and women. What I'm trying to say is they're reading about this in a society that really is in many ways ageist. How do they approach this? Is there a learning curve for them to even begin to understand what a person in their 70s, 80s, and 90s may be experiencing, other than maybe the relationship that they have with a parent or grandparent?
Correct. So you've hit on a really big piece, and that is the stereotyping that our society has, and so that these young people come in with. And that gets talked about. That gets talked about in the very beginning about what is your view of aging? What is, when you think of somebody old, you know, and to a 20, you know, an 18-year-old, old is, you know,
30.
My age.
You could be 30 and you're old if you're 18 years old.
Exactly. And so old, you know, what does that actually mean and what does that look like? And there's all of this, you know, this stereotype of old is, you know, the not just the gray hair, but there's assistive devices, or they're not healthy and they're not well, and there's memory issues, and there's, you know, you have to talk to them, like, slowly and differently. And one of the great things about this program is that every time at the end, a student always says, "Oh my gosh, that's not, this is what, these people are in their 80s and 90s, and some are over 100. they're swimming faster than I am, and they're doing this, and they're going and joining the, you know, they're engaging in the community, and they're giving back and volunteering, and they like the same things I do. And my resident only met with me during the Tappan Square rallies against whatever they're being part of that movement for, and it really gives the younger person a completely different view on what is aging.
The way people speak, I mean, you mentioned that, and this mm-hmm. learning process. I know from my experience, and I'm sure you from your experience at Kendall at Oberlin, There's a tendency sometimes for people to walk in and in either a hospital situation or a facility situation or even socially and see somebody in their 70s, 80s, or 90s perhaps, or older, and really speak to them and infantilize them the way they talk to them,
yeah.
as opposed
yeah.
to, this is a human being. You know, you don't have to, how are we feeling today? You know, and sort of like this very, very childish way of talking. Do they work through that?
Yes, they do right away, because our residents are very active and engaged in the community, and they really sometimes take the leadership of the relationship. So Kendall at Oberlin, I think last year we gave like 35,000 hours of volunteer hours back to Lorain County. That's a lot of hours.
Mm-hmm.
So that means with 300 people, we're really engaged. And that means that nobody's sitting home and reading a book, and they might be, but they're not doing that every day. They're not, our group is really, you know, integrating themselves and staying active. And that's really what it's so important about. And, you know, we're looking at numbers, right? We've got all these numbers that are thrown around in our society that, hey, you know, cognitive loss, there's going to be over in another couple years, you're looking at 45% of our society that are over the age of 85 having some form of cognitive loss. That's one in two people almost, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, and we're living longer. We're now on that tipping point in our society where AARP is telling us that the amount of people over the age of 70 is going to be greater than the amount of people under the age of 70, right?
Right, and so, we're already there of the boomers of we just talked about this in class yesterday, actually, that there are more people over 65 than there are people under the age of 15. So the inverted pyramid, population pyramid in this country right now, is very powerful. It's very real. It's
correct.
Extremely real.
And this younger generation is who's going to be, you know, the kids in college now, they're the ones that are going to be dealing with this gerontology issue when they're out of college. So if we can help them already have a mindset of what aging looks like, real true aging,
mm-hmm.
and what does wisdom transference mean, and what does a seasoned adult do, and what really happens when you're older, if we can get them to understand that as they're coming through, it helps us in the long run, right?
I would hope so. I would hope so. We're speaking with Michelle Tarsitano Amato of Kendall at Oberlin in Ohio, really talking a little bit about a very, very fascinating program that the facility at Kendall and Oberlin in Ohio and Oberlin College have created. We're going to be back with Michelle in a minute, but I just want to bring you another reminder from one of our friends here at Boomer Generation Radio, the Hecht Investment Group of Janie Montgomery Scott, which provides for you a concierge financial consulting and planning service. The Hecht Investment Group uses a formal investment process as their foundation, and as we've mentioned here before, clients receive frequent communication and rapid response to questions. And as many of us know in this field, there are no needs greater than our own when it comes to personal financial planning, especially if you're like me who really does not understand money. The Hecht Investment Group provides experienced guidance and an efficient management process that is very, very important in today's financial environment. Additionally, Hecht and his team can assist you in connecting to the investment banking department, who specializes in assisting middle market companies to achieve their strategic goals. We invite you to contact Peter Hecht and the Hecht Investment Group. You can call them toll-free at 855-289-2168. That's 855-289-2168. Or visit them at hechtinvestmentgroup.com. The Hecht Investment Group also is on Twitter. They're on LinkedIn and on Facebook. And a reminder that Janie Montgomery Scott is a member of the New York Stock Exchange, FINRA, and the SIPC. And we'll be back with Michelle right after this little brief musical taste. Welcome again back to Boomer Generation Radio here on WWDB AM 860 and streaming live on WWDBAM.com. Boomer Generation Radio, this portion of Boomer Generation Radio, again, is being brought to you by Kendall Outreach, serving the field of aging by raising public awareness and advocacy around important issues of older adults through education and training in comprehensive, safe, and individualized long-term care practices. Kendall Outreach has been sharing Kendall's approach to quality care with consumers, advocates, providers, government agencies, and related organizations since 1989. And to learn more, we invite you to visit kendall.org. That's K-E-N-D-A-L.org. And click on Outreach. We're going to be back now with Michelle Tarsitano-Amato, the Director of Creative Arts Therapy and a Dementia Specialist at Kendall in Oberlin. Michelle, right before that little break, you mentioned this very, very interesting phrase in talking about the program that you're, that the intergenerational program, wisdom transference.
Yes, isn't it? I love that term because I'm not really sure who I heard say it first, but it's really about our older adults or our seasoned adults or, you know, those over the age of 75. This group has so much wisdom, right? And in our society, in the past, like I grew up Italian, so my grandparents were very much involved in our bringing up. And my grandfather taught me how to drive. My grandfather taught me how to plant. A lot of the wisdom that my grandfather and my grandparents had were passed on to me as a child, right? Mm-hmm. And how are we making sure in our society that our older adults are given the opportunity to transfer all of this knowledge they have to the next generation?
So this is, I mean, this is a tremendous concept. I use the term as a clergy person, the idea of spiritual capital.
Yes.
That this generation is, that there's no, that life experience is still the greatest teacher. And so what you're trying to do is obviously link this generational divide in so many ways. Is there any type of mentoring? I would imagine as the students get involved with the residents of Kendall at Oberlin, there's either a planned or sort of like accidental type of mentoring takes place. And since these are freshmen, I guess you're building in the opportunity for the time of their 4-year sojourn or 4 or 5 year sojourn at the university that these relationships continue. Have you found that?
Yes, very much so. And the best way to talk about that for me is to tell stories because I'm a storyteller, right? So when we first started the program, one of the amazing things that started to happen is we had an individual who was really, one of the students was really having a hard time adjusting to being away from the parents and being on their own and really trying to, with their own identity, because that's what we do in college. When we paired this person with a resident, the resident actually was able to walk that path with the student.
Mm-hmm.
And the student ended up deciding that she really needed to go back home, and they started a diary journal where they each kept a diary for each other. And even they kept that diary going for like 4 years, even after the student left. And they would each write to each other in this diary and then mail that diary to the to each other.
Wow.
And so these are so here you've got this wonderful mentoring opportunity, this really rich and deep connection that all started from a simple, let's pair you during this class, right?
Right.
And so these relationships that we try and establish, sometimes they go really well and sometimes they're kind of surfacey, but the ones that really work are the ones where they both partners invest in the relationship. And it's really great when it's Thanksgiving and the student can't get home. So all of a sudden in Thanksgiving at Kendall, you have all these students here.
Wow.
Because this is my student, and I met them in the class, and I'm bringing them to our holiday meal. This is my family can't be here, but my student is here, and the student is now engaging in our life.
Do you have the same group of people of residents every year, or do you try to vary?
It rotates. It rotates. Because what happens is if you are establishing a relationship with somebody, you know, and you're following that person for, you know, that person becomes part of you, your family, literally, for the next 4 years, you're kind of following through. And it's hard to have many, mentoring many people. We really want to kind of keep it so that we kind of spread the wealth around and the opportunity around as well. And it seems just to work naturally where we have about 30 residents every that rotate every other to every third year that go through the program.
So this has been going on for 10 years.
Correct.
So you have now probably, you do have a body of data. And is it possible for you to generalize some of, have you seen any follow-up? Do people keep in touch after they graduate?
Yes, they are keeping in touch, just like the story I just gave you is one really good example. Another one of my favorite examples is we had a student that was, she went to Oberlin High School. She then went on to the college. Mm-hmm. She actually took this course her freshman year in college. And I was just at the American Society on Aging's conference.
Oh, the conference, yeah, right.
And she was in their leadership program.
Oh, wow.
In gerontology, right. And she's like, well, that course was life-altering for me. It made me decide that I wanted to really work in this population, and she's now working for an area in aging.
That's cool. That's very gratifying.
Isn't it? So this is the kind of power that if we can create these multi-generational and intergenerational opportunities for relationship building that can affect lives.
So you were at the ASA in last month. Talk to me a little bit about is there a trend to more of this intergenerational? Because I think you can make the case, if you just do an overview of the landscape, that given the siloing in a lot of generations in the country, that doesn't happen as much as it should.
Well, correct. And this was kind of a theme through the conference. And it's actually, I don't know if you've heard of the organization's Generations United.
Mm-hmm.
They've been around quite a few years, and they've been trying to get traction, and they get some really, really good programs and best practices throughout the country. And actually, City of Oberlin was named, I think it was 2013, we were named one of the best intergenerational cities in the United States. And what we're finding, because we were just talking with another city, and the barriers that we've created, the silos we've created, are the regulations. So, you know, we'd like to have more multi-generational living where you have an on-site daycare in with your nursing home or assisted living. Well, you know, you have these barriers like background checks and TBs and this and that. You know, all of a sudden you have all of these layers upon layers of prevention that allow the natural interaction between the two, you know, generations.
Yeah, somewhere in my memory, I think we interviewed somebody from one of the Kendall facilities, I think, that in that facility, we're doing that. They had a preschool or daycare, and there was a real intergenerational attempt to normalize things. I don't know if that's the right word, but really
to do what
you were talking about.
Right. And I think that is getting more traction. I mean, we have one here at our Kendall, and I think most Kendall communities have always valued the multi-generational living. We need to build that more into our society so that it's not just here or there, but it really is part of our culture in our cities.
Mm-hmm.
And not, you know, this. One of the programs I heard of, I don't know if you've heard of the Catch program.
What is
that?
That
was a really cool program where it's an after school program geared towards elementary school kids, and your older adults in your community come in and they volunteer. What they do is they create a healthy snack, and then they do an exercise program together, and then they help with homework until the parents are out of work and then can come pick up. And that's what would normally happen in a real home, right?
Right.
You were multi-generational living.
Right. Right. So Grandma would be there to make us, you know, give you your Oreos and milk, and then sit down and make sure you did your math homework.
Exactly. And make sure you got outside and played.
Right. Yes, obviously. In my friend's case, more like go outside and play, and then maybe we'll get to our homework.
Yeah.
But that's a long time ago. And
right.
Yeah.
But it's these are the kind of opportunities I feel very powerful that we need to really help create in our society. And I think these opportunities that we're doing with the college are ways that we continue to build. Like last year we did a class on, there was an adjunct professor that came in and she taught literature on medicine culture. So what she did is she looked at how American literature was looking at how medicine and the culture of medicine was treated in our society. And then they talked about the Health Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually had, like, weekly discussions. She'd bring her class over. She'd walk them all over to Kendall in our auditorium. And we had, like, 60 to 75 people in our auditorium having really good, in-depth discussions about literature and medicine.
Wow.
How cool is that? Right.
Speaking of the discussions and stuff in the class, that's the genesis for this program. Is it just literature, or have over the course of these 10 years has it branched out into looking at the way media, TV, movies presents older adults?
Because of the academia restrictions, it's stayed specifically on literature.
Okay.
Now, we have had different, at the end we always do a potluck and we always talk about our experiences. Sometimes, because Oberlin is an art school, a liberal arts school, we have that lovely conservatory there, and then we have a lot of art-based students. So sometimes the end project is a performance. Sometimes it's a video. Sometimes, and it's always integrated. One of my favorite ones that was done is we had a resident who actually was at end of life, and the student was a film student, and he was a freshman, and he asked permission to film their interactions every week and his feelings and her feelings. And basically he created this end-of-life story for her where she reviewed what was so important to her life and what she wanted to pass on to her children. And then he put this film together.
Wow.
And she actually passed away at the end of the class. And he gave this video as a gift to the three daughters.
You know, you raise a very interesting concern here. In the conversations that take place as a result of this class, the residents are all active, etc. However, I'm concerned as to, I'm sure it's happened, and then it may be an intended consequence of the class, that these conversations between the generations really do deal with mortality and, you know, here you are, a person 18 years old, and here's a person 98 or 88 years of age in two different sets of the scale of life. Do these types of conversations take place? You know, I'm closer to death and I'm going to reflect, and this is what I want to pass on even to you. Do these types of mortality questions come up?
Yes, very much so. It depends on who gets paired up. So in the beginning, when we're matching residents and students, if I have a resident who we know is on hospice,
mm-hmm.
but really, really wants to be a part of this program, the student, that's presented to the students that, you know, are you willing and able, emotionally able, to walk this journey with this person, with the understanding that you are witnessing, you know, you are the witness to the end journey. Are you willing to be that witness?
Hmm.
And, you know, because not everybody can do that. You know, hospice to me is an amazing, just an amazing piece in our society, and the people that participate in that are amazing individuals. And especially if you're only an 18-year-old person and you have not had that in your life, it can be a very difficult process. But we have been very, very, very lucky. I know we've had a couple residents who, during this process, have passed away, either unexpectedly or expectedly. And the group comes together to support that individual, that student. Their peers support them, and then the Kendall community supports them. So I'm thinking of one we just had not too long ago. And she was his witness,
mm-hmm.
and he had no family. And I'm going to tear up a little bit here, but sorry. But she really went through that process with them, and she had to go through her own grieving. So we actually asked hospice to work with her at the end, because it was such a powerful relationship between the two. And now she now holds his life stories.
Well, I imagine these are extremely powerful moments for the students, as you're mentioning, because they get a glimpse into a world that usually they don't even have a chance to deal with. I'm wondering also, is there some sort of, because you just triggered something in my mind, not every one of these students, or let me rephrase this. Is there some sort of screening process for the students to take this class, especially their freshmen, they register for this class?
No, there's no screening process. This is a freshman course, they are told. And the students, and Jed and I are really good about working with the students way ahead of time before we introduce them to residents, as well as me working with some of the residents ahead of time on what expectations are.
Right. So that's because you don't want a kid who's going to register for this class, but really registering for it on some psychological level to work out some issues that they never were able to work out at home with a grandparent or a parent, and project that onto a resident.
Right.
Who has known, you know, that's not fair on any level. So that's what I would say was it. So I guess in the context of these conversations, that hopefully some of those issues would emerge.
Correct. And you know, we're always monitoring the class, and the students have to keep journals, and I'm monitoring the residents, let me know if something's not, you know, gelling well. But we've been really lucky. We've been, a lot of our residents and a lot of these relationships have all been very loving and supporting of each other. And the ones that aren't, you know, they're more surfacey. You
mm-hmm.
know, it's like, these are my acquaintance. I go and I visit her, and we talk, but we don't go any deeper. And that's okay, too. Because, you know, we're not forcing people to have some kind of relationship, but we want to create an environment that will foster and give opportunity for that.
We're speaking with Michelle Tarsitano-Amato, the Director of Creative Arts Therapy and a dementia specialist at Kendall in Oberlin, about this very interesting program between the facility and Oberlin College. A reminder that this portion of Boomer Generation Radio is being brought to you by Kendall, a system of not-for-profit communities and services in 8 states that advocate for and empower older adults to reach their full potential. Please join us in together transforming the experience of aging, and Kendall invites you to do that by logging on to Kendall, K-E-N-D-A-L, at www.discoverkendall.org, Kendall with one L. And again, the toll-free number is 888-759-0128. That's 888-759-0128. 0128. And the site again is www.discoverkendall.org. Michelle, the way you're describing this program, have you ever thought about doing like a marketing video or sort of like a small documentary about what takes place with this program and the perceptions of the students, especially some of the students have gone through the program and the residents?
That's a great idea. We have not done that. I think because we let it be a little more organic and allow each relationship to develop. But that would be maybe I can get a film student to do that for me.
Well, I'm sure you could. I would think that would be a very powerful half an hour video or film or maybe more about just the faces. And you talked about the stories, not only the students in the class, but going back, you know, the 10 years and getting somebody like the woman that you just talked about at the ASA and where this interaction really was pivotal in maneuvering them or helping to change their attitudes, because you're really trying to change attitudes and create a different type of cultural phenomenon and, you know, one relationship at a time.
So, yes, exactly. Thank you for summarizing it so well.
Feel free to use it, free of charge.
Thank you. Yeah, because that's really what we are trying to do. And I think we also want our residents to have opportunities to give back.
Right.
It's really important to the residents that come to us. And just because you retire, your vocations don't go away. Right?
No. Dirty word. We don't use the word retire. It's a dirty word.
Yeah. Many of my residents have told me that when they retired, they didn't think they'd be so busy.
Yeah, that's a hope. You know, that's another story for another. That's another program for another time.
Yes,
before
yes,
we start running out of time, we have a we're starting to wind down here. Just two quick questions.
Sure.
Based upon this 10 years and you've been doing this, and it sounds like first of all, how many students in an average class? Are we talking about 10 students, 30 students?
14. Yeah, we do 14. Once we did 18, but that was getting a little bit much for us. I think we've been trying to keep the class around 14.
So what's your hope for the students who are engaged in this process? What, you know, stepping back, what's the goal that you set for the students? And a follow-up, what's the goal that you set for the residents? What do you want to see happen here?
I really want to see a relationship built between the two. I want that bridging of understanding of what each generation is experiencing and having the younger generation know that somebody else has been in their place. Mm-hmm. They may have done it differently, but they've been there. And I also want my residents to really have that opportunity to transfer their wisdom. And I really want them to have an opportunity to give back to society because they have so much. I mean, there's so much knowledge here, and there's so much to offer from our community. And it's the opportunity just to be able to give that information and pass it on, and then to have somebody open and willing to receive it.
You
have somebody that has all this lovely knowledge, but nobody really wants to hear it. And how do you, you know, create opportunities where the students can actually be open and willing to hear and receive?
Do you ever get the student, the 18-year-old, who looks at that 78-year-old or that 85-year-old and say, you really don't understand what it's like to be 18 and the residents?
Yes, I think every relationship starts that way.
Really? Really?
Really? Every relationship ends with, wow, I really learned a lot from this, and I am now treating my grandparents differently, or I don't have grandparents, and now I feel like I have some.
Do the students ever get their own family, you know, their own parents or grandparents engage with the residents? I mean, if they're ever visiting campus or anything like that, do they ever encourage that?
Yes, they very much so. So, like, we'll have, it was just funny you said that because we have a young gentleman from Brazil and his mother is here visiting, and he was showing off his mom to all of our residents yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Taking her room to room to the nursing home and the assisted living because we're continuing care.
Right,
we
I know.
IL, assisted and skilled. And he works mostly in the assisted living and skilled, and he was bringing her down and introducing her to everybody. And everybody was just so thrilled to meet her and tell her what a wonderful son she has. And isn't that great to, you know, for a mom to hear, my son's awesome.
No, it's great. I would imagine that this does foster some very interesting possibilities of creating really these not only relationships with the kid, but with the extended families as well, especially if they're commuter students. I mean, you know, not, you know, people from the local area that they may have an opportunity to actually continue the relationship as opposed to a student from Brazil or San Francisco and stuff like that.
Right.
So Michelle, yeah, we have like 2 minutes left before we have to leave. Give me a summary. If you were able to wave the magic wand, for CCRCs, et cetera, around the country and similar types of communities, many of whom are really located in areas where there are universities and colleges, et cetera, what would your one wish to be to help change this culture as we age out?
My wish is really to not see so many silos in our culture. You know, the silo of we must protect our youngest people from this and this, so, you know, we don't have open doors to the resources of the middle school or the high school or the older adults. And so we've really created so many silos in our culture and in our cities. And how do we really, using the wisdom of our older adults and what they have to impart back to us and the school systems that we have and the colleges that we have, how do we use that to bridge and break down those silos?
Well, this whole idea, I think it's a great idea. This is a great wish. And slowly but surely, as we said, one relationship at a time, just as you're doing at Kendall and Oberlin with the college. So thank you for giving us a little bit of a taste of wisdom transference that you're involved with. So continue. Good luck, Michelle, in your work. And we wish you well. Have a great week. To all of you Boomer Generation Radio listeners, we'll see you next week here again on WWDB AM 860 next Tuesday, 10 a.m. on Boomer Generation Radio. Take care. Stay healthy.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.